Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. More of the natives are getting restless. You know, the sanctuary city idea sounded like such a good play until you had to do the sanctuary part.
Yeah, it was all warm and fuzzy and progressive, and now it's, we have a problem on our hands.
So the city is doing a series of these town halls, it would appear. They started on South Shore neighborhood, not received terribly well. The idea of using the old South Shore High School as a center for migrants.
Yeah, they filed a lawsuit to stop it from happening.
Wright College is the site of the latest town hall. Residents were out in force, some 400. This is going to be a summer respite center for migrants.
Oh, yeah, just from June 1st to August 1st. Because while you were gone, we had Alderman Spezzato on, and we broke the news. Like, he had just learned minutes before he came on the show that it was official that they're going to be using Wright College for 400 migrants.
And the city is set to approve today, the first council meeting that BLM Brandon presides over. They're set to approve $50 million for migrants, that money will last all of a month. That will last until the June 30th, $50 million for migrant services. Speaking of which, the city elders and functionaries, bureaucrats out in force, the City of Chicago Office of New Americans, representative from that office, Jesus Del Toro, was at the town hall last evening at Wright College. Not received terribly well when he made this comment.
This is another chapter in Chicago's long history of immigration, whether it was the Italians, the Poles, whether...
Stop it, folks. Stop it.
That's the Alderman. I love the Alderman. God, I love him.
Stop it, behave. 3-1-2-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line. You see, I think there were some persons of Italian and Polish and Irish extraction in the audience, and they were pretty quick to make the point that their ancestors came here legally, and that's an important distinction. One resident made that point.
We love people, but this is an absolute slap in the face to those who come here legally.
Ooh. Well, the problem, I mean, they need some space to put the people that are in police districts. I mean, 18th District, you mentioned it before, but the lice problem now, they're not even letting people in. It says enter at your own risk. People having sex in the bathroom in the 18th and the 19th, they have... Last headcount they had was 32 people, but they're like, we don't have the facilities, and people are bathing, like taking sponge baths in the bathrooms.
That's called being a welcoming city. If you want to have sex in the bathroom at a police precinct, then you're welcome to do that. It's a welcoming city. We like people here.
They don't have showers there. These people need to shower.
And Wright College professor Sydney Hart, she was on hand.
Oh, boy.
Professor. Hilarious. She was on hand, and she's ready to live her values, and I respect that.
We have space, and we are a community college. We always talk about putting the community in community college.
And they're putting the community in community college.
Sorry.
Yeah, putting community in community college. That's what they're doing up on the northwest side. Juan Salgado, he is the chancellor of the city colleges. I don't know which description I find more humorous. Wright College professor, which title? Wright College professor or City College's chancellor? Which is more humorous to you? Here's Juan Salgado.
We raised our hand when we housed migrants at Truman College, and we raised our hand this time around.
pretty defiant. You got to respect that, huh? Well, City colleges is raising their hand and say, we shall respond. We are putting ourselves forward. You know, the residents didn't seem to be as excited about that as Juan Salgado and Jesus Del Toro and the rest of the city functionaries. Well, and of course, the professorate at Wright College.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. The chancellor at Wright College, the fact that he keeps saying, no, they'll be out August 1st, you know, because the fall semester begins and we won't have to interact. That is such a lot. I mean, such bull dive. If he actually thinks that they're going to be out by August 1st, and I just think that it's humorous.
I like the news out of New York. Mayor Eric Adams is seeking to suspend the city's quote-unquote right to shelter regulation.
What's that?
It's pretty self-explanatory.
Okay, Ray.
Because we're overwhelmed by 40,000 migrants and we haven't gotten the billions in funny money that I want from the federal government, here's another sort of utopian left statement of values that is going by the wayside. Sanctuary city, not so much liking the consequences of that policy choice. Right to shelter, this sort of constitutional right that the city has advanced, virtue signaling fashion, of course. Now that, hey, we can't be held. I don't want to be liable under that ordinance, that right to shelter ordinance, because we can't guarantee shelter for all of the New York City residents, the people in the country legally, as well as the migrants. We can't do it. We don't have the resources or the logistics or the wherewithal or the managerial talent. He didn't say that other part. I'm adding that. Yeah. All right. Suspend right to shelter. Suspend sanctuary state. Stop sending migrants. Send them to every town in America. Boy, they bail water fast, don't those leftists, when the consequences of their policies are visited upon them? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. By the way, a related story. See if this doesn't strike you as very, very third world sounding. Governor Pritzker deploys peacekeepers to Chicago for Memorial Day weekend.
What?
Are they going to be the blue beanies from the UN or
peacekeepers?
Peacekeepers are being deployed. They've got this unit called the Citywide Crisis Prevention and Response Unit. You know, the CPRU.
I thought I was in the know. I don't know about this group. What are their colors? Are they going to be wearing vests? Are they going to be armed? Are they going to be intermingling with people? Because this is one of the deadliest weekends in Chicago, and Brandon Johnson doesn't have a plan.
30 peacekeepers and street outreach partners will, quote, provide essential assistance in de-escalation, conflict resolution, and crisis support across Chicago. Oh, no, I can't wait. I can't wait till they de-escalate, conflict resolve, and provide crisis support to the carjackers in the city.
Excuse me. Can I talk to you, sir? An off-duty police officer was shot last night trying to stop a carjacking. So officers in uniform are getting carjacked and killed, and then we have this, too.
Peacekeepers being deployed to Chicago this weekend. Isn't that something that the U.S. military does to places like Somalia? George in Naperville, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
When the aliens would land in our country, they just came in peace. But these sanctuary cities have to offer these people a lot of services to keep this going.
Thanks, George. Bob, Gray's Lake.
Yeah, this is what happens when Biden Rhea hits America. You know, the sanctuary virtue signaling cities and people who have yard signs that in their yards that are virtue signaling. Everyone who has a yard sign in their yard should at least take one unvetted family with two children and put them up in their own houses, because, you know, the rest of us are having to deal with unvetted people all over our streets. You know, and they should have to pay for it.
Yeah, you know, the problem, though, is there's not enough families coming over. So instead of taking in a family, anybody who has a welcoming center, sanctuary city, hate has no home here sign,
take them in.
Why don't they just take take three or four adult males, since we have so many males coming over?
I'm really good with that, too. You know,
okay.
We should just call it Biden Rhea, because that's what it is. It's just happening everywhere in America now.
Biden-palooza. Let's put a positive spin on it. Yeah. Thanks for the call, Bob. But we like paloozas here. Biden-palooza.
These peacekeepers, they're not going to be armed or anything. I mean, this is they're putting themselves in harm's way.
Yeah, okay. They're getting this is all like you? this is funding these nonprofits. This is the okay. These are the payoffs that state and city government pay to community organizations that are going to be conflict resolvers.
God,
right.
How's that parks going? And at large events to
Dan in Edison Park. He was at Wright College last night.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Yeah, I just wanted to say we're in trouble. We've got there was a large contingent of pro Sanctuary City scumbags in the crowd too. Uh-huh. And I don't know if they were sent there. They looked like they were organized. They were all holding the same signs. You know, naturally, each one of them with the rainbow. A lot of them with shirts.
Rainbow.
Hate has no home. Hate has no home here. Shirts on, and like I said, they were loud. I don't know if they were from the neighborhood, but they were there. And,
well, remember when the alderman asked on the show? He said, "I don't want anybody. I don't want any outsiders. Only if you live." In my ward, are you allowed to go to that meeting?
Well, everybody had a show ID, I heard,
that,
right?
Yeah. Yeah, well, the problem I've got with him is, you know, he was talking that same old jive about, you know, these people do jobs that Americans won't do. I've heard that out of his mouth a couple times, and it's just as insulting as it was when George Bush said it and Barack Obama said it. I don't know. Spazzato.
Hey, was Bobby Martwick there? You know, Bobby Martwick, that's a state senator now that looks like 20 pounds of manure stuffed into a 10-pound bag. That guy, was he there to wave the flag for a sanctuary city and all that?
Funny, Dan, I don't believe he was. I certainly didn't.
Oh, interesting. Because you'd see him if he was there, you know, because he's so
Oh, yeah. Shoved, no, you'd smell him, you know. Too.
Yeah,
he should have been there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Thanks for the call. You know, it's funny. Speaking of that, you know, not wanting outsiders in. So the report was you had to show your ID to get into the town hall. You had to prove that you were a local resident to get into the town hall. So let me understand something. So the local residents of Chicago have to show their IDs to get into a town hall, but nobody has to show any ID to either vote, to get into a polling place, or to get into this country. Oh, the ironies abound.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM 560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Business owners, now's the time for your business to make the move to a locally owned business bank. Hi, Mike Gallagher here to let you know that you don't have to look far. Signature Bank was founded in Chicago with a simple mission to help companies like yours grow, succeed, and thrive. Their decisions are made locally by a terrific team that knows your name, cares about your business, and invests in your success. That's why Signature Bank is my bank. I'm a customer. As business owners, they knew that local family-owned businesses were not getting the help they needed or deserved. So I invite you to reach out to my friends at Signature Bank today. Write the number down. Remember this phone number, Signature Bank, 773-467-5630, and learn all about this great bank, 773-467-5630, or visit them online at signaturebank.bank. That's signaturebank.bank. Signature Bank makes commercial banking personal. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Now, from the Signature Bank Studios, this is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. We're talking about the town hall up at Wright College on the Northwest Side yesterday, where this welcoming city, Northwest Side residents, had to show ID to get in to talk about using an institution that they, in part, finance as a respite center for migrants.
Well, I know it's hypocritical, but the alderman really just wanted to make sure that outside agitators did not attend. He wanted to hear from people who actually live in his ward.
Yeah, right.
The problem is
that this is from the same crowd. I understand, but this is the same crowd. No ID to vote. No ID to get into this country. No ID for anything. Except if you're an actual taxpayer living in the community that's affected, then you have to prove you are in order to get in to make a comment. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Again, the ironies abound when reality meets the lofty rhetoric of the left, don't they? Or don't they abound, these ironies? Yeah, they do. They do. I just wonder, too, you know, I know they've got Napolitano and Spezzato on the northwest side and Gardner. So they've got some sensible alder humans, relatively speaking, part of this potential common sense caucus that Ray Lopez talked about forming. You know, hey, folks, 400 show up for this town hall because Wright College is going to be a migrant respite center. Where else do you get and when else do you get 400 residents to show up for just about anything? But of course, you're showing up now at the end of the line once all the pieces have been put in place by the left, which is why they can take the defiant attitude they took at that town hall. Juan Salgado, the chancellor, we raised our hand and we're raising our hand again. And basically, we don't care whether you like it or not.
No, it's happening. And the town hall is just smoke and mirrors. I mean, they're not going to take anything to heart. They just, you know, people can vent and then we're going to do what we're going to do anyway. It's already, the ball is in motion and the alderman couldn't stop it. He was told that this is what's going to happen. And the chancellor didn't push back at all. He embraced it.
Look at your state legislators. Look at your statewide office holders. Look at the city of Chicago. You let it get away from you. We let it get away from us. It's been happening for a long time. As I said, now you're at the end of the line where reality is intruding. And a lot of people are getting mugged by it, literally and politically, aren't they? Terry Duffy and Roger Romanelli were on Fox Business to talk about BLM Brandon, talk about crime, talk about tax increases. You know, here's another example. Roger Romanelli. I read these releases that the Fulton Market Association sends out about this and that on behalf of the business community in Fulton Market, one of the few actually thriving neighborhoods in Chicago right now. You know, and I understand. I want to be, you know, I want to look at this through the realpolitik lens of a Roger Romanelli about what they need to do to survive in the city, to advance the interests of the businesses that the association represents, for those businesses to advance their own interests. You know, you want to, on the one hand, be respectful and considerate of what people are having to do to get by. They have to work with the landscape as it is, not what they wish it were. So I try to keep that in mind. But by the same token, I can't help but be frustrated by the approach that people like Romanelli take. It's very much like the approach that the Republican Party in the state of Illinois has taken for so many years, which is why it's become completely irrelevant. And so I would implore the Roger Romanellis and the Terry Duffys, the CEO of the CME, to take a hard look at the Republican Party in the state of Illinois as a cautionary tale. That is what happens when you throw in with your captors. That is what happens when you beg people who are inclined to roll over you. When you pretend there is some common ground to be forged, some stable common ground, maybe fleeting, but stable common ground to be forged, where we can all agree that these are going to be the rules of the game. There is not agreement, and there's not going to be. So I understand you have to survive with the results that are imposed upon you. But by the same token, you could provide intellectual and moral leadership that frames the dynamic in the city much more honestly And frankly, neither Romanelli nor Duffy do that. They're very narrow, and it's very short-term. And I know you have to live in the short-term, but you can live in the short-term with an eye towards enhancing the understanding of people writ large who you represent or who will listen to you to think about medium and long-term changes. Because you're not going to be able to play the short-term game and survive. You'll survive till tomorrow. The next day, maybe not. So Roger Romanelli talking about, and you know, and part of this is put on him by Fox Business, but Fox Business pulls out, remember the Sidewalk Cafe shooting in Fulton Market last September? Those people were diving under tables, a drive-by shooting, somebody got winged in the leg and so forth. So that's what they're talking about as sort of a exemplar of the crime that afflicts the city. And so Romanelli was asked, they played the video that we all saw of that shooting, and Romanelli was asked to respond to it, and here's what he said.
Roger, as we're watching the bullets rain down here on patrons that were dining here, what was your reaction, and what have you been asking the city help with?
I'll tell you, I've worked in Chicago for 33 years as an urban planner. I have never, ever seen a crime like this, unprovoked, that we had at the Sidewalk Cafe. Mm-hmm. And so the reaction of small businesses across our city are, they are very shocked, they're deeply concerned, but they truly care about our city and they want to be part of the solutions.
Well, what is the solution here? What can be done?
We believe we can impact crime immediately. Chicago needs high-tech cameras to help our police officers. Mm. Our officers have asked for cameras at community meetings. They can't go official, but they've asked for more cameras. We're 1,200 police officers down. If we can get up a network of cameras that can read license plates and catch these criminals, we can reduce crime immediately.
Mm-hmm. Have you heard from BLM Brandon on the cameras, Roger?
We haven't heard back, but what we have seen are newspaper articles that these cameras that we put up on our street poles potentially cost $25,000 per camera. But other cities are spending far less than $25,000. We're asking Mayor Johnson, tell us, do these cameras cost $25,000 or not? Can we get the cost down?
Yeah.
Do you support more cameras in our city? We can impact the crime problem right away.
Can you? Is that the play? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636DA, turnkey.pro text line.
He seems more worried about reparations and the climate than these
$50 million for migrants.
$50 million, that'll be. This is his first city council meeting today.
Got to do a budget review to find money for those annualized jobs he's going to quote unquote create for the city's youth. Maybe you could have all the restaurants in Fulton Market hire those kids that Brandon Johnson wants put on somebody's payroll.
Yeah, but year long, not just summer jobs. Well, think bigger, okay? Reimagine.
I didn't say summer jobs. Okay. I said annualized.
All right. Yeah,
that's right.
Cameras. Didn't go to school at the same time, but okay.
Terry Duffy responded to what Roger Romanelli had to say. He said this.
That's catastrophic what happened in that neighborhood. That's one of the few neighborhoods in Chicago that's actually growing right now. So to see that is really sad. I don't know if cameras, Maria, are the ultimate answer. I would say the ultimate answer is the court system here is so bad in Cook County. They need to get these people in courts and hold people accountable. We can catch them. We catch them all the time, but we let them go. So the difference is I think the court system is really a big issue here, including the cameras.
Yeah, I think Terry Duffy is closer to the mark on that score.
Yeah.
And so this is sort of my point about Romanelli. You know, instead of begging for cameras, say, look, we can put cameras up. Some businesses will take it upon themselves to put cameras up. Police can respond. Police do respond. Police can pick up these people. And then we can do the same thing next weekend when the people they picked up are back on the streets.
Yep.
So this is where, as we talked about with respect to the tax credit scholarships yesterday, this is where you make an allegation that is based in evidence and you challenge people in office. You put them in a corner rather than always accepting them putting you in a corner and in the position of the beggar please give me my camera. Thank you, sir.
There's no Kim Fox, to go get him.
Kim Fox and BLM Brandon, you are not enforcing the laws. You have no interest in enforcing the laws. You have no interest in removing habitual violent offenders from the streets. Prove me wrong. This is what we know to be true. Now, prove me wrong. Don't tell me it's not true. I mean, you can say that if you want, as you've said it before. No one believes you. That's why you're not running again, Kim. That's why Lori Lightfoot was thrown out of office. No one believes you. So just be honest with us and say, we are not interested in prosecuting people who rob and engage in other offenses short of murder. We're just not interested in prosecuting them. We are not going to incarcerate them. Just tell us that. Because that's what you're doing. That's what you're essentially saying and have been saying for years per your activism. So just tell everybody. That's the kind of challenge that needs to be thrown down. But it just doesn't come. Everybody wants, just give me my cameras. Just do this. The Cook County court system is, the Cook County court system. Terry, be specific. We have a problem with the prosecutor, and we have a problem in the prosecutor's office. You don't have to believe me. Just read the letters of prosecutors, longtime prosecutors who've resigned, or just look around.
They also need to revamp the electronic monitoring system. With this 48 hours off, this Illinois Appellate Court was looking at it. You know, 24 people committed violent crimes, 19 weapons violations. Why? You stay inside for 5 days and you get 48 hours off, and these are people who are violent offenders, carjackers, rapists, involuntary manslaughter. I mean, you name it, and they're repeat offenders.
And, Matt in Mount Greenwood.
Oh, there's so much to say. Brandon Johnson's only going to make an excuse for the violent criminals that are let out because they just haven't had an opportunity to act civil in their particular neighborhoods, apparently. But I had a little quick story regarding Evanston. This was several years ago. We're doing a job up there, and there's a woman who was doing her yard work in this beautiful house, and she had a "hate has no no home here" sign in front of her home. So I was driving by, and I said, "Excuse me." She thought I was asking for directions or something like that. And she goes, "Yes, can I help you?" I said, "Go Trump." And she started letting out a whole list of profanities. "F you, you scumbag," and everything else. I get her and laughed. I love that. Yeah. Apparently, hate does have a home there. It was fun.
Thanks, Matt. Andy Hinsdale.
So, having had a business that was located in Fulton Market District, I've dealt with Roger Romanelli over the years. The guy's he's a political gadfly. He's a professional fundraiser for his own organization. I don't know how he ended up on Fox. But the key is what he said. I've been a urban planner in Chicago for 33 years. Mm-hmm. Awesome job. Where are we? What have you done? Right?
Yeah. Yeah, thanks for the call, Andy. Uh-huh. Larry Elmhurst.
Hey, good morning. Hey, these crooks don't care about cameras. They know they're not going to, the cops can't chase them anyway, and they don't care if their picture's on the paper or whatever.
Thanks for the call. Yeah, well, that's a whole other thing, the police protocols. Here's a fun story. Now, this is out of St. Charles, Maryland, but it, excuse me, not St. Charles, Charles County, Maryland, but it could easily be Chicago. This is, and Charles County is southwest, so it's a D.C. metro,
okay.
You know, a
suburb
market.
Kind of, yeah.
It started with an organized shoplifting spree when two carfuls of people showed up at a business, grabbed what they could carry, and fled the scene. Police spotted the vehicles, and it turned out the vehicles were also stolen. When they finally caught the group, four unnamed juveniles, as well as an 18- and 21-year-old, were arrested. So five people arrested after shoplifting and stealing a couple of cars.
That's a big deal. That's a felony.
Mm-hmm. Two of the kids, the juveniles, a female guardian showed up to collect them with two other women. And they showed up to the police station in another stolen car.
Oh, that's nice. Keep it in the family. Okay.
You got five teenage, you know, juveniles, essentially 21 to under 18. They're in stolen cars with stolen goods. They're being held. And then a couple of the females, two females and two other women show up in another stolen car. How did police know it was stolen? Well, one of the things they noticed when they pulled up to retrieve the five who had been picked up for stealing cars and other things, the back window was busted out and the steering column was broken open.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
We're coming to get you. Okay,
things are going pretty well in metropolitan areas. Oh. Pretty, pretty, pretty well. Frank, Arlington Heights.
Hey, good morning. Seems like the id came out there at the Wright College meeting and so forth. We get people upset about all this stuff. Mm. But, you know, and sometimes, you know, you see the emotions of people in polling and then you see the election results and, you know, there's a difference there. And what actually happens with the elections makes you wonder about the elections sometimes. But I'll tell you, I've been a ward healer my whole life and I've met a lot of people on the campaign trail. And I'll tell you, when you meet some people, they seem to have no idea what's going on, none whatsoever. And reminds me of a quote I read the other day, thought, and just thought itself, is the enemy of tyranny. I don't know how much thought is going on out there, Dan. I really don't. There's just a lot of intellectual invalids out there in society. All of a sudden, something happens they don't like in their neighborhood. They get out there to the meeting. But there's a lot of people who aren't willing to do the hard work to go out there and self-govern.
Yeah. I thanks for the call, Frank. I mean, it's true. And I've, of course, witnessed over my many years walking precincts and being involved in campaigns, too. But it's never going to be the majority. I'm not expecting it. I'm not expecting everybody to walk a precinct. A committed minority can move the needle. All I'm expecting is the other piece of what Frank said, for you not to be an intellectual invalid. For you to just pay a little bit of attention and connect just a couple of dots so that you don't need to constantly be hit with intellectual 2x4s before you figure out what's happening. You don't need to hear about some migrant respite center being stood up at Wright College before you start to wake up to what's been happening around you for the past 3 or 4 generations. I don't think that's too much to ask of any citizen. Jordan, Forest Park.
You know, Will, if someone asked the new mayor to make a public service announcement to reduce police shootings, have the mayor make a statement that says, if you are a young black male and the police tell you to stop, please stop and cooperate. Also, do not run away from the police. Also, if you have a gun and you run away from the police, you will probably be shot and killed. Now, I know that your parents may not have told you all of this. I don't know, but you have to do that.
You don't have to be black. You can be Hispanic, white. It doesn't matter.
Say that.
Jordan, thanks for the call. Yeah, well, we're talking 80% and 80%, but your point is well taken, and so is yours, Jordan.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM 560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Business owners, now's the time for your business to make the move to a locally owned business bank. Hi, Mike Gallagher here to let you know that you don't have to look far. Signature Bank was founded in Chicago with a simple mission: to help companies like yours grow, succeed, and thrive. Their decisions are made locally by a terrific team that knows your name, cares about your business, and invests in your success. That's why Signature Bank is my bank. I'm a customer. As business owners, they knew that local family-owned businesses were not getting the help they needed or deserved. So I invite you to reach out to my friends at Signature Bank today. Write the number down. Remember this phone number, Signature Bank, 773-467-5630, and learn all about this great bank, 773-467-5630, or visit them online at signaturebank.bank. That's signaturebank.bank. Signature Bank makes commercial banking personal. Member FDIC, Equal housing lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. So as we previewed yesterday, late morning yesterday, we previewed it on the show, and then late morning yesterday, Illinois Attorney General Kwame Raoul had his press conference. The timing, impeccable. A day before the Illinois General Assembly returns to kill the tax credit scholarship program for K through 12 in Illinois, which they returned today. And my understanding is that program is done.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dan.
So the timing of this, right? Kwame Raoul comes out with a report that is more or less sawing sawdust over the sex abuse scandal in the Catholic Church. And by the way, if you noted the choreography of this, not that you need to be a Ray Fossey here when you're on the left, because these comm shops, both locally and nationally, are at the ready to do the bidding of Democrat socialists like Kwame Raoul. Kwame Raoul, not even done with his press conference, and stories are up on the Tribune and the New York Times with the headlines that Kwame Raoul wanted them to be. 1,900 students sexually abused in the in Chicagoland Catholic schools over, well, this wasn't part of it, just the headline number. This is going back 7 decades.
Yeah, a quick turnaround time. Yeah, I'm sure that they got a pre-press release where they could start working on it probably days ago.
If not have this story written for them so they could just cut and paste it. It's so much easier. You know, why go through the machinations when everybody knows what we're doing?
Well, they construct the press releases as if they're news stories. So, yeah, it's lazy journalism.
So wonderful, wonderful choreography. It's nice to watch a plan come together. Attorney General Raoul's report on Catholic clergy sex abuse in Illinois, 700 pages long. As I said, he was asked what the most recent case was, and he wasn't sure, but he's talking about maybe the early 2000s. Uh-huh.
Wow.
This is what he had to say. You know, first you have your soundbite moment, of course. You have to offer your moral indignation.
The public and many families put faith in the Catholic Church and its leaders in ways that we do not trust other establishments. But when such trust is betrayed with abuse to children, and there are efforts to cover it up, the call for accountability should be resounding.
Yeah, everybody wants to get in on the act, no matter how late they are to the play. Agreed. There's no defense for the Catholic Church for the sexual abuse that went on in the church and the trash approach that so many higher ups in the Catholic Church took with respect to sexual predators. Completely agree. But I think the conversation is about stopping sexual predation of children in general and in K through 12 educational settings in particular. That's the conversation, isn't it?
Why didn't he bring up the 500-plus kids that got sexually abused or harassed last year alone at CPS?
Well, this is my point. This is no defense to, because there is no defense to what occurred within the church and the schools that the Catholic Church operates. But some context is important. And also, if it's not just taking any and every opportunity to tear down an institution for which you have no respect, to use the opportunity to stop or to repeal legislation, a program that you don't like, the tax credit scholarships, then why wouldn't you include a more broad review of the landscape that would necessarily include where 90% of kids go to school, and that's in the government school systems, not just CPS, but obviously including CPS. Oh, Raul's big reveal was
What was it?
Significantly, the analysis reveals that each Illinois diocese underreported the number of child sex abusers in the Catholic clergy when they initially released those numbers.
That generated a response from Cardinal Blaise Cupich. And on that particular score, he had this to say.
We have asked repeatedly that we be informed of any cases discovered by or disclosed to the Attorney General's office. Yet we saw new, unexplained names in this report. As the report states, the Archdiocese of Chicago has taken the lead in our country and beyond to meet this societal challenge. Further, we have continued to improve on our initial efforts over three decades by dedicating significant resources to creating best practices for protecting children, promoting healing, and preventing abuse in our church.
He also mentioned what's happened since 2006. Cupich went into some detail here, as is warranted.
Since 2006, we have maintained and continue to update a public list of those clerics of the Archdiocese determined through an independent investigation and review to have a substantiated allegation of sexual abuse of a minor against them. Further, we have worked with and encouraged religious orders who have full and exclusive access and rights to their files to publish lists of their members with substantiated allegations. Our website lists religious order priests who have ministered for the Archdiocese and were found by their orders to have substantiated allegations of child sexual abuse, no matter where and when the abuse occurred.
Point here is that people in the church were passing the trash, as I said, and were hiding people previously, and that was a disgrace, and it brought the condemnation of the church that was warranted. But that is not what has happened in the last 25 years. That is not what's happening now. And Kwame Raoul is trying to blur those lines of distinction, even as he makes sort of passing reference to the fact that, you know, the church has made significant reforms and so on and so forth. Much more significant are the protocols in the Catholic Church and the Catholic schools than in the public schools, which is, again, my question to Raoul would be, so what the church has done in response to what they did, is that a model for government schools to follow? And if it is, why aren't they following it?
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. You can also reach us all morning long on our text line, 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment.
And at the bottom of the hour, you want to stay tuned for this. We're going to talk to Tom Hampson, who is 50 years a professional licensed criminal investigator, who has done a number of investigations into sex trafficking of minors and sexual abuse of minors. And he now has a foundation that seeks to prevent child sexual exploitation. So he is a font of knowledge on this. So we're going to talk this entire hour about it and bring in an expert investigator at the bottom of the hour. So stay tuned for that. Something else, just in terms of Cupich's response, and people who listen to the show know I'm no fan of Cupich.
No, you're not.
He's a social justice Catholic. He is a man of the left. There's no question about that. He just got run over by his fellow travelers when it comes to the tax credit scholarship program, and I can't wait to hear the response from those who thought diplomacy was the path to sustaining the tax credit scholarship program, which is so integral to the survival of so many Catholic schools. It's just incredible to me, the self-inflicted harms. But on this score, he's right. And so when somebody's right and they present the evidence to support their contentions, then you call it. You call balls and strikes here, and that's what we're doing. Blaise Cupich on where the arch is today.
First, we have reported all allegations of child sexual abuse by clergy to civil authorities, no matter when the abuse is alleged to have occurred, whether the accused is alive or dead, a diocesan priest, an extern priest from another diocese, or a religious order priest. There are no hidden or undisclosed cases. The vast majority of cases occurred decades ago, and many of the perpetrators are deceased. no cleric, with even one substantiated allegation of sexual abuse of a minor against him, is currently serving in the Archdiocese of Chicago.
And that's a big statement. And again, substantiated, so people, my immediate thought was, of course, who? Flager. But unsubstantiated, at least that was the determination. So everybody is, entitled to due process, including priests. So no cleric with a substantiated claim of criminal sexual abuse is serving in the Chicago Arch. That's something that Kwame Rule failed to mention. Can CPS say the same thing? Judy in Lamont, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hi, good morning. Just a couple of things. Just a big thank you. I work in a parish office, and it was like a bomb went off yesterday when that news hit. And I am able to speak freely in my office, so I just am just blessed. But, I helped them put the pieces together because of listening to you and Amy. That, you know, was just enlightening, and they listened to what I had to say and the information, and because of listening to you guys in the morning, it all kind of made sense to them a little bit more. And we talked a little bit further, and I said, you know, personally, because now they're, you know, trying to figure out what to say it, how to offend, how to not offend. And it was just a mess. It was just, you know, very, you know, a very, you know, interesting day in the office, and not taking away from any of those people that were hurt by what happened in the past. But I said, this is a perfect opportunity to weave something into how evil is out there lurking in many different ways. This is one of them that we're getting past, but there's so much out there. But I just wanted to say thank you to you guys and helping me. Sorry, I get passionate about this, but thank you for helping me get them to talk.
Thanks, Judy. Appreciate the call. Just on the Chicago Public School matter, we talked about it at the time, this Inspector General report that was released at the beginning of this year that got almost no coverage. I mean, it was reported, but then something like this being reported, you would think would generate some dialogue, some interest, some calls for reform, some questions about just what exactly is going on within the Chicago public school system. Will Fletcher, the Inspector General for the Chicago Public Schools, mm-hmm. his office's sexual allegations unit, which started only in 2018, went back 7 decades with the church. You want to go back 7 decades with CPS and see what you find? His Office of Sexual Allegations is 5 years old. That investigative unit opened 477 cases just last year. Now, I know what you say, 477 cases. Well, there's, I mean, they say 330,000 kids. Maybe there's 250. Maybe there's 225, whatever the number is. So, and those are just opening cases. I understand. But that you're just going to walk past that and not ask any questions? Well, that's what Chicagoland collectively did, other than this show. Why? Tom in Deer Park.
Dan. I heard this come out yesterday. There's no way I could have possibly read through all of that. But from what I gleaned, you said it best at the beginning, it's sawing sawdust. And I just saw the timing in the guy that released it. Like, when I'm not privy to the Cardinals' personal stuff, but when the COVID lockdown hit, there was a lot of stuff between him and Pritzker about, you know, yeah, we'll shut down the church, you know, happy to do so. And then with the abortion issue, when I feel that the Cardinal got pantsed by the governor, but then I think Raul is the point man, and one of them for the AR banning, which has been one of Cardinal Stupich's pet projects. He's had the auxiliary bishop sign off on it. He's been down in Springfield. He sent Father Flager to Springfield. He made public statements after the Pulse nightclub. So for all he's done, and they work together, as you really do a good job on your show of this, for all he's done, he gets that release yesterday. Just ridiculous. Sawing sawdust. Great coverage. Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Tom. Yeah, well, it's interesting because Supich has traded his social justice politics,
yeah,
which, oh, by the way, that is not his mission. Labor economics, policy on Second Amendment rights.
Setting COVID policy?
He's traded secular political positions for the viability of the church and its schools. That's a terrible trade. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile. Now, from the Signature Bank Studios, this is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson. America First with Sebastian Gorka. Today at 3, right before Sean Thompson at 4 on AM560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. We're going to talk to Tom Hampson, licensed criminal investigator. Been doing that work for 50 years.
Wow.
But I just want to go back to play, before we talk to Tom, play a bite from what Blaise Cupich, Cardinal Cupich, released yesterday in response to the Raul report, sawing sawdust, as I said, of the sexual abuse of children that occurred within the Catholic Church over the past 7 decades, but with no case in Raul's report, according to Raul, his 700-page report, more current than 15 or 20 years ago. He couldn't remember. This is what Cupich said the church has done, the Chicago Archdiocese specifically, has done since 2006, because I want to get Tom Hampson to react to this.
Since 2006, we have maintained and continue to update a public list of those clerics of the Archdiocese determined through an independent investigation and review to have a substantiated allegation of sexual abuse of a minor against them. Further, we have worked with and encouraged religious orders who have full and exclusive access and rights to their files to publish lists of their members with substantiated allegations. Our website lists religious order priests who have ministered for the Archdiocese and were found by their orders to have substantiated allegations of child sexual abuse, no matter where and when the abuse occurred.
Now, that's not the whole ball of wax here, but on the transparency side, it's what's appropriate. So we'll start there with Tom Hampson, licensed criminal investigator, 50 years, started back with the state of Illinois' Legislative Investigative Commission in the 70s, which was initially created to investigate organized crime, and that brought Tom into investigations involving child sexual abuse as well. He is also the founder of the Truth Alliance Foundation now, which works to prevent child abuse. Tom, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Glad to be here.
So what was your reaction to, you know, not on the prevention side, which we'll talk about, but just on the transparency side for what has transpired and how the church is committed to being transparent going forward. Is that sufficient, or are there additional steps the church, as an example, should be taking in the interests of disclosure?
No, I think they've been pretty transparent about what's been going on since 2006. Initially, in 2006, 2007, it was like pulling teeth to get them to come out with any information. But over the last few years, they've been very transparent with incidents that have come up, and also keeping up their keeping their website current as far as their they know for the cases that they've got. Now, back in I investigated the Catholic Church in 2006, 2007 for DCFS. They brought me in to investigate the priests after the, you know, it was after the Boston Globe came out with their expose about the church. And now what's different now is back in 2006, 2007, their investigation process wasn't particularly good, but I understand since then it's been improved.
And, what should be done, generally speaking, with the church, and maybe you know what the church is doing on this front, and then generally speaking on the prevention side, preventing people who obviously have a proclivity to abuse children from getting into these institutions in the first place?
Well, they've done quite a few things. One thing that they've implemented is the Virtus program, which is, they screen and train everybody, all the volunteers, all of the people that work with kids in the Catholic Church. This is something new since the Boston Globe report. They started doing this, and that's been a significant improvement. The one thing that I don't think they still do is they don't do adequate screening of the priests themselves. They don't, like the priests, for example, don't go through the Virtus program, or at least they didn't. They didn't think that was necessary, and I thought that was a mistake. But other than that, they seem to be on the right track.
Now compare what the church is doing with respect to their schools to what's happening in a school system like CPS, where, as we were talking about before you joined us, according to the Inspector General for the Chicago Public School System, his office opened 477 investigations into child abuse just in calendar year 2022.
Yeah, the problem of child sex abuse in public schools is far worse than it is in the church. That one of the things that's happened in public schools over the last 50 years is that the character requirements, for example, for teachers has declined over those years, whereas in the church, just since 2006, the character requirements for people that work in the Catholic Church with kids has been strengthened. It's been increased. They've paid more attention to the individual's overall conduct, whereas in the public schools they're not.
Well, with this 696-page report that Kwame Raoul released yesterday or unveiled to reporters, why did it take 5 years for this investigation, and why did they relitigate decades-old cases?
Well, I don't know. There really isn't. I haven't had a chance to thoroughly review the whole thing. I've skimmed through the entire report, but it's very heavy on graphics and short on information. There's nothing in the report that I saw that looks at all new. All of the information that I read is very familiar. It was already available publicly back in 2006. It really has not added anything to our understanding of what's going on in the Catholic Church.
And so public
even the section on investigations, they say that the problems with the investigations, I think they were off base on that section, and they really don't even distinguish the different ways the investigations have changed over the years. For example, in 2006, one of my criticisms of the way they were doing investigations was they would interview the victim and also the priest, but they wouldn't do any interviews of other people. They wouldn't go out and look for potential witnesses like clerks and secretaries or maintenance workers in the rectories. They wouldn't seek out information which might have added to their understanding of what was going on, and also maybe even caught some other priests that were involved in improper conduct. They didn't do that. I think they've improved that process now, but it really was a pretty pathetic investigation in 2006.
All right. So now, in the early 2000s, there was this report by University of, I think she's at VCU, Virginia Commonwealth, Carol Shakeshaft. I don't know where she was at the time, but she's at VCU now, I believe. Anyway, this was commissioned by the Department of Education, and we've mentioned it on the show before in discussion of this topic. And she essentially concluded, among other things, that about 10% of public school students in America are sexually abused in some way in school every year. 10%, I mean, that's 5 million kids. And there was an updating of the study that she did in the early part of the century just a few years ago that essentially confirmed the findings in the original study. Do you believe those conclusions? And if so, is there any evidence that the public schools, government school systems, big cities and small towns, I mean, across the board, have taken any steps similar to what the Catholic Church has?
Well, no, they're not. They're not doing it at all. In fact, they're going. Like I said, they're going in the opposite direction. They're requiring less and less of the teachers. For example, years ago, teachers didn't share their private life with the kids. You didn't even know if they were married, other than calling them Miss or Mrs. You didn't know anything about their private life. They didn't have any social media. There wasn't any interaction with the kids. And today, it's like their whole life is an open book. This isn't a good thing to have teachers function as friends of the children. They're there to educate them, not become their friends. And so I think that becomes more of a familiarity that invites the kind of intimacy you don't want to have between an adult and a child.
But the Shake Shack findings, you believe those to be ballpark?
Oh, absolutely. They're correct. In fact, there was one just earlier this year that came out. It was called The Nature and Scope of Educator Misconduct in K-12 that confirmed the report. Their finding was that it's 11.7%, not the 10.6 that Carol Shake had, but I think statistically it's not a particularly significant difference. However, and that was just published in 2023.
So if you have millions of kids being sexually abused writ large in a K-12 education, how do you explain the lack of scrutiny, evasive action being taken by school districts?
I can't explain it. Even in 2004, when Carol Shake Shack came out with that report, it was right after the Boston Globe triggered the nationwide look at the churches. And Carol Shake Shack said the problem in public schools was 100 times worse than it was in the Catholic Church. And there was nothing said. It was crickets. There was silence about it. And nothing has been done to deal with that problem anywhere in the country. In protecting children, it's really pretty pathetic.
I know, as I mentioned at the outset, you started out looking at organized crime, and it brought you into places where you were investigating, as you have people accused of or suspected of being engaged in sexual abuse of children. So, what did you learn from all those years and all those investigations about child predators?
Predators go where the prey is, and with children, if they're interested in children, the most prevalent place they'll try to show up is in the schools, and they will gravitate toward the easiest place that they can get into. So if the screening requirements, the more lax the screening requirements, that's where they're going to go. They go to schools. They work. They get involved with sports programs. They volunteer for opportunities to minister to people overseas where there's been a disaster. Wherever they can have access to children, unfettered access to children. That's where you'll find them. And so unless you realize that and take steps to identify them and screen them out, you're going to have problems. And I think that's what the church learned a long time ago, and the schools still haven't learned it.
And when schools say, hey, Tom, we do criminal background checks on everyone, you say what?
Means nothing. It means a little bit, but the problem is that less than 2% of predators are ever caught, ever. 98% of predators never are encountered. They never become identified. Nobody ever knows that they even exist. Wow. Because most of the victims of child sexual abuse never tell anybody about it. There's 60 million adult survivors of child sexual abuse in the United States. And everybody knows them, but very, very often some of your closest friends have been sexually abused and you don't even know it.
And you also told me when we spoke off the air about the difficulty in these investigations now as compared to when you started, when the programs on TV were different, the relationship between teachers and students were different, which you mentioned, what was going on in classrooms and in libraries was different. Can you elaborate on that?
Well, back in the 70s, there was it was easier to distinguish between allegations that were real and allegations that were false, because real allegations, they could be very descriptive about what happened to them, versus the false allegations, they were very vague, or they didn't have the right details on the different activities that they engage in. But today, with how sexualized their culture has become, they can easily describe having a sexual relationship with somebody that is based on something they saw on TV, because they accurately show people engaging in sexual activity, all manner of sexual activity, broadcast TV, not to mention cable. Cable is even the worst kind. Plus, there's just a plethora of porn sites, risque, images all over the internet. Wikipedia is a pornographic site.
Really? And what about, like, even state lawmakers in Minnesota are trying to normalize pedophiles? What's your reaction to that?
Minor attracted persons.
Outrageous. Yeah, it's in fact, that's going to be happening. It's now, 2SLGBTQQIA+. Pretty soon they're going to be adding MAP for minor attracted person, which is just disgusting. There's no justification for that at all. And the idea that these are different identities is ridiculous. This is all made up stuff by John Money and Alfred Kinsey.
He is Tom Hampson, licensed criminal investigator, 50 years, State of Illinois Legislative Investigative Commission is where he started. And he is now the founder of the Truth Alliance Foundation, which seeks to prevent child abuse and child sexual abuse in particular. Tom, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate your insights.
Thank you.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
It's what Chicago is talking about. It's Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Politics and sports and politics and sports and politics and intersection. Arrogance and ignorance. Arrogance, ignorance, and arrogance and ignorance. Intersection.
Speaking of the intersection of arrogance and ignorance, a lot of accidents at that intersection. Crashing into each other, the LA Dodgers and the Sisters of the Perpetual Indulgence.
Okay, I can't wait to hear this story.
Sisters of the Perpetual Indulgence that were invited to the L.A. Dodgers annual Pride Night. Together, we'll continue to knock down barriers and foster an atmosphere of acceptance for all, said L.A. Dodgers exec Eric Braverman. Well, the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence are not sisters at all. They're men dressed up as nuns that look like Kiss, are meant to mock Catholics. This is like nun cosplay is what this is. Members of the group go by names like Sister Jezebel of the Enraptured Sling, Sister Shalita Corndog. At Easter, they host Foxy Mary and Hunky Jesus contests.
And they're wearing the habit. I mean, this is disgusting. This is sacrilegious.
Matt Hennessy has a good piece on this in the Wall Street Journal entitled, "These Aren't Tommy Lasorda's Dodgers." He writes, "Most Americans are happy to live and let live. The Sisters of the Perpetual Indulgence have their agenda. In a free country, that's all fine and good. But why do the Dodgers need to let Sister Taint a Virgin prance around the bases looking like a flabby Kirk Gibson in habit and cornet? Everyone is already welcome at the ballpark. It feels un-American to force-feed culture war politics alongside the Peanuts and Cracker Jack. The O'Malley family owned the Dodgers from 1947 to 97. They were known for doing things the Dodger way. That meant professionalism and class, on and off the field. Vin Scully, the team's longtime radio announcer, personified the Dodger way. Devout Catholic, Vin Scully. So did Jackie Robinson, Duke Snyder, Gil Hodges, Sandy Koufax, Steve Garvey, Oral Hershiser, Mike Piazza, Andre Ethier, and Tommy Lasorda. The Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence are not classy. They're obnoxious and gross. They don't belong in the Dodger lineup. I guess we're going to have to recast that phrase as American and as baseball and apple pie. We're going to have to strike baseball from that now, aren't we? For more on this, we're pleased to be joined by Brian Birch, who is the president at Catholic Vote, catholicvote.org. Brian, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Well, you got another day, another anti-Catholic stunt. So good to be back with you, Dan, to talk about the latest.
So the LA Dodgers invited these gross and obnoxious, to borrow from Matthew Hennessy, people to their Pride Night. Then they rescinded the invitation, and then they re-invited them. So what's happening with the Dodgers?
Yeah, well, it's important. It's not just an invitation. They're going to award and honor this organization. So they're holding this group out as someone that apparently that the Los Angeles community should be, you know, esteemed. So you're right. The Dodgers first announced June Pride Night, June 16th. They're going to honor all these organizations. We expressed our, you know, opposition to this. We called on Catholics everywhere to oppose it. We flooded their phone lines, shut down their phone lines. We had people inside of Major League Baseball and the Dodgers organization, by the way, who agreed with us that were providing us information. And a couple days later, the left-wing groups got to them. Of course, the NAACP, all the LGBT groups said, if you don't honor this anti-Catholic, vile, blasphemous, bigoted group, we will pull out entirely of your LGBT celebration. And so the Dodgers caved. They have now become, as I've described them, the Bud Light of baseball, where woke corporations decide that, at least in this case, you know, presumably, you know, half or more of their fan base are unworthy of respect or at least decency. 30% of Los Angeles is Catholic, many of them Hispanic Catholics who hold the Virgin Mary in some esteem and certainly wouldn't appreciate what the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence do by mocking Our Lady and dressing her up in drag and, you know, gyrating on the crucifix and holding condom masses. I mean, the list goes on. The things this group has engaged in, they've defiled the Eucharist, used it in a sexual stunt. So, you know, again, as you said, let's play baseball, not politics.
Well, how large is this group? I mean, what are you talking, a dozen people?
Right. Well, the group's about 40 years old. They started in Iowa and then, of course, migrated to San Francisco. And I did look at their tax returns just the other day, and they've been celebrated for raising millions of dollars for so-called, you know, charities. Well, this is approximately $1 million over 40 years. The most recent tax return that I saw, they raised $20,000. So this organization is a front group. It's a bunch of transvestite men that like to dress up as Catholic nuns and engage in, you know, sacrilegious sexual stunts. And the Dodgers decide this is the group we're going to honor and award. So this is an unserious group that whose whole purpose is to mock Catholics, and it's just, you know, preposterous. The Dodgers have decided that this is the group that they're going to honor.
You know, to play devil's advocate a bit, if the Dodgers want to go full Bud Light, if as you say, then why not let them? If that's who the Dodgers are, then why not let them be transparent about who they are and let the fans make the ultimate decision on the Dodgers?
Well, I think this is the question that a lot of corporations are going to start facing. Bud Light, Anheuser-Busch is certainly facing it. Target is the latest example. According to reports overnight, Target's now pulling some of the children's clothing that they had put on the racks that were designed to, you know, push this this, you know, crazy cross-dressing stuff that now a lot of mothers of children don't appreciate that shop at Target. Now we have a baseball team, and we're heading into June where, Dan, you and I know this is not going to be the only big corporation that's trying to strut their, you know, LGBT credentials. And so this is the question, and I think you're starting to see pushback, and I think it's going to grow, and it's going to be one of these political questions I think is going to be big over the next, this coming presidential cycle is, in what way has the left overreached, especially when it comes to a lot of this, the gay rights stuff, but also with respect to our corporations and all of our institutions becoming so politicized. Where we've lost our way, where everything now needs to be a political, propaganda campaign, where we're, you know, no longer worried about shareholder values, where we've got stakeholder values. We've now weaponized not just, you know, our government, but now weaponizing our corporations against everyday Americans.
Well, I think it's more, and it's generally that is a big question, and there's some texture to it, but specifically the thing that is interesting to me, these pride nights in particular, you know, you've seen hockey players refuse to wear the pride night the novelty jerseys, and then they, because they're devout Christians, they don't agree, and so then they get excoriated as some kind of bigot and so forth. We saw that happen a couple times during this past hockey season, but it's like the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence, it's and the drag shows in schools, that this to me is something like qualitatively different. These scenes that are ripped from the pages of a Gore Vidal novel, that just are opposed, like viscerally opposed by a majority of Americans, and yet they're pushed upon people anyway. It's when they push politics, some sloganeering or some candidate or some referendum question. But this, like, presentation of Gomorrah that we're supposed to celebrate, that's the thing I think is, like, that is really – that's something that's qualitatively different, and I think it needs to be focused upon.
Well, I think it's a great point because you're right. This isn't the Dodgers saying, you know, everyone recycle your beer cups after the game.
Yeah, right.
Care about the climate, right? This is – we're going to hold this group, as we described, you know, in esteem and honor and award them because of their grotesque, you know, and vile behavior. And, you know, in some ways, this is bigger than I think a lot of the, you know, the corporate woke questions. It's really a question of what is this whole movement ultimately all about? And I don't think it's, you know, this love is love and it's about equality and tolerance. It's about deconstruction and it's about destroying the institutions that have built this country and have built Western civilization. And a lot of us have been saying this for a while, yourself included, that at root, the ideological kind of premise of a lot of this is not, you know, peaceful coexistence and let's find ways to, I love this way, you love that way. But no, it's now out in the open of we must destroy anyone that seeks to utter any kind of opposition or doesn't agree. All must surrender, all must bow at our altar, our new religion, and that we're going to use you and your patience and tolerance. You know, it's not a coincidence. There's no imams of indulgence. You know, there's no Muslim mockery
yeah,
here.
And imams of indulgence, yeah.
But what's
right,
so
I'd like to see that.
So sick about the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence. They're going to accept a, quote, community hero award on the field at Dodger Stadium on June 16th.
Yeah, take Johnny to Chavez Ravine and say, Johnny, someday that could be you on the field.
Right, so this is a recruiting tool.
Habit.
No,
yeah.
This is great publicity for them. They must be so excited, this group, right?
Well, it's interesting because I've had some conversations with people that are friendly with some of the Dodgers ownership, minor owners. And I think in a lot of these cases, and including the Dodgers, I don't think the owners like this very much. I don't think this is good for them. They certainly don't like the publicity. It's dividing their fan base. And the problem here is that the inmates are running the asylum. You have these community relations departments and marketing agencies, especially in places like L.A., but they're everywhere, made up of these, you know, recent MBAs whose only you know, social experience has been, you know, the diversity pro class they took, you know, at Woke University. And they have no concept that there's this whole, you know, other part of the country, hundreds of millions of people that don't exactly agree with what they're trying to push on us. And so, you know, in some ways, this is kind of an upside down situation. And if you're an owner of a business, and this is part of the reason why we're pushing back, we want the owners of these businesses to be so shamed here that they finally begin to push back against a lot of the people that they have hired, by the way, and they're allowing to run and push them into these you know, crazy corners of culture.
He is Brian Birch, president of Catholic Vote, CatholicVote.org. And you're, by the way, before we forget, we should include, before you leave, we should include that you're raising money to run an ad campaign about this, yes?
Oh, good.
Yes. We've announced we're going to try to raise $1 million. We're going to start running ads starting later this week, billboards, ads in Spanish, TV ads, all Dodgers-related media across Los Angeles. You know, I want them to wake up every morning wondering if these pesky Catholics are going to go away, and we're not. This is not going to stop.
All right, very good. Brian Birch, president of CatholicVote.org. Brian, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you, and he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Now, from the Signature Bank Studios, this is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson.
If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. The Socialist Spice Girls are none too pleased with the prospect of compromise by the White House with House Republicans on a debt ceiling raise. A compromise that could include any reduction in spending, could include any work requirement for public support programs. Two of the leading lights of the left and bandmates, Socialist Spice Girls, Pramila Jayapal, who's the Socialist Spice Girls manager, and, of course, the star, the front girl, AOC. Take a listen.
I think there would be a huge backlash from our entire House Democratic, you know, caucus, certainly the progressives, but also in the streets. You know, I mean, I think that this is, it's important that we don't take steps back from the very strong agenda that the president himself shepherded and led over the last 2 years.
But if the president agrees to spending caps, or if he agrees to work requirements on certain social safety programs,
it's going to be a problem. We do not legislate through the debt ceiling for this very reason.
All right. You heard it from Jayapal in particular. Taking it to the streets. You put a work requirement on welfare. We are taking it to the streets. Summer of Love Redux.
Can't wait to see that.
For more on this, please be joined by Steve Moore, economist, GovZilla author. Steve, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it. The gauntlet has been thrown down.
Good morning, guys. And by the way, I love this, you know, the fact that, that what's her name again? I can never pronounce that name.
Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
You mean AOC?
Oh, the other one, Pramila Jayapal. Yeah.
No, the one who said we're taking it to the street.
Yeah, Representative Jayapal, yeah.
I mean, here's so ironic about this. Oh, my God, these terrorist tactics by the Republicans. I think the Democrats are pretty good at terrorist tactics when they say they're going to, you know, take it to the streets and start, you know, obviously, you know, rioting and getting violent if they don't get their way. Incidentally, there was another development by one of the squad members. Again, I can't keep track of all these people. There's so many crazies in the House who was saying, hey, wait a minute. Oh, Rosa DeLauro. She said.
Yeah.
The one thing that Biden has agreed to, which is a layup, right? It's a no-brainer to basically say unspent COVID money, Amy. The money that there's like almost $100 billion that was authorized that we didn't have to spend because after all, COVID.
No. More like $500
billion. Oh, well, is it $500 billion?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, anyway, she's saying she doesn't want to. She says, no, we should spend that. And, like, that's the only concession that Biden has made. We shouldn't spend unspent COVID money, which is, you know, I used the analogy in our hotline today. That would be like in 2002 saying, we have to spend money on the Y2K problem.
Oh, I remember that. Remember that scare? It never happened. Well, what about giving the $500 billion back to the Treasury? Wouldn't that just make sense and be a simple solution?
Yes, of course that's the solution. You don't spend – they treat this all like it's a cookie jar, and they can just raid anytime they want. And so, look, they're not close right now. And, the polls are now showing 75% of Americans want either a debt ceiling extension that, cuts spending, or, there's like 20% of Americans don't want to raise the debt ceiling at all. They're not buying this sick and little, oh, my God, the world's going to come to an end if we don't raise the debt ceiling. And by the way, I want to make this very clear to your listeners. I want to say this loud and clear because you've been lied to, folks, for the last 2 months. There will be no default on the debt. Let me say that again. There will be no default on the debt. By the way, the 14th Amendment of the Constitution prohibits any default on the debt. The 14th Amendment says that the debt must be honored. That means it must, if you own a bond, it must be paid. So if we don't reach an agreement, it's not that we're going to default on the debt. What scares the bejesus out of the liberals is we might have to shut down the Department of Education, the Department of Labor, and the Department of Energy and some of the foreign aid payments for a few months. I don't know, Dan. I can live with that.
Yeah, so the temporary shutdown of permanent government. Yes, right. It's very tragic. But I can hear the chants in the streets now. What do we want to spend unspent COVID money? When do we want to do it? Right now. That's a rallying cry. Okay. Well, so how does
the whole healthcare system will collapse, according to Rosa Gloria, unless we spend. By the way, I thought it was closer to $100 billion. You're saying it's $500 billion. So I'm gonna have to check those numbers. But still, $100 billion, $500 billion is still a whole hell of a lot of money. And now look, the other thing is on these welfare payments, reform. This is something that, passed in a bipartisan way in 1996, was a gigantic success. What happened when Obama was president and then further under Biden during COVID is we got rid of the work requirements. That's why it's so hard for businesses to find workers. So Republicans are simply saying, if you're going to get food stamps, if you're going to get public housing, if you're going to get, Medicaid free health care, you got to work 20 hours a week. By the way, 20 hours a week, Amy, I think you and I, most people listening to this show, are working a whole hell of a lot more than 20 hours a week.
I know it's not a big ask, but isn't it also 20 hours a week or 20 hours of schooling?
Yeah, or schooling, exactly. So it's not like it's, oh, my God, this is like, concentration camps.
By the way, the specifics on this, and I'm citing Dr. Joel Zinberg, who we talked to about this. He had a piece in The Wall Street Journal. More than two years after all of the money that was drop shipped around the country, $444 billion of the total remains unspent. More than $114 billion hasn't even been obligated. So there's $114 billion that's unobligated. There's $440 billion that is unspent.
Wow.
I would go for the larger number, wouldn't you?
I would too. And half $1 trillion, folks. They want to spend on just their wish list of programs. We're going broke. This year alone, this year, we will borrow close to $2 trillion. Biden's been running – recall that in recent months he was saying, I've reduced the deficit more than any other president. What is he talking about? We're looking at another $2 trillion deficit this year. These numbers – and look, I'm not a debt phobe. I'm not someone who thinks debt is going to destroy things. But once you get debt as high as we have it right now – when I came to Washington, the national debt – and now I've been in D.C. a long time, 1985. We had about a $2 trillion debt. Now we have a $32 trillion debt, headed to $52 trillion.
Right. Debt becomes a problem when you can't service it, and that's where we're getting to. Yeah right.
It becomes a number when you can't even count the zeros.
Yes, right. I wanted to get your reaction to where we are on the in fighting inflation. And Don Luskin writes in The Wall Street Journal yesterday about this. And he's saying, and Luskin is, he's a smart guy, and he's actually a Friedman acolyte, Milton, that is.
Yeah.
He writes, my worry is not inflation anymore. We're at we already hit peak inflation, and we're down by half over where we were last year. My worry is deflation. He writes that one might argue that after so much inflation, a little deflation wouldn't be so bad. But economists usually see deflation as a greater threat because it's easy for consumers simply to stop spending when they expect prices to fall, and that vicious circle causes recessions. He's saying that the Fed, the real reduction in the money supply combined with interest rates is pushing us into a deflationary environment in the next 12 months.
I'm kind of in the middle on that. I don't see deflation. We still officially have a consumer price index that's been rising at 5%. So, that's a long way from the 2% Fed inflation target, and it's a even further way from, when you have deflation, you have negative price increases. I don't think we're near that right now, but I agree with his fundamental point that inflation is coming down. No question about it. I like to look at the commodities index. I'm not just a monetarist. I don't just look at the amount of money in the economy. That's what Don's talking about. I also like to look at what's happening to the lead indicators on prices, like what's the price of oil, what's the price of cotton and copper and those things, because you can get a real – every minute you can go on your computer right now and find out what's happening to the change in the prices of those things. And they've been they've been falling a little bit in price, which means I think we are headed – I think we're going to see inflation head down to maybe 3 or 4%. I don't think we're going to go negative. But my bigger worry, Dan and Amy, is the economy is slowing down. I mean, look at the housing market. It's come to a screeching halt. There was a new study that came out that 80% of Americans now think this is a bad time to buy a house. That's the highest number they've seen in 50 years.
Well, yeah, because the mortgage rates are, the 30-year fix is
exactly
out of its mind.
Right.
It's like 7 or 8%.
Exactly.
But here's the thing. But that's what Luskin is talking about. He's essentially saying the Fed is fighting the last war, which is what government always does. And these mystics at the Fed, they overreacted on inflation, and now they overreacted on quantitative easing for a decade.
Now they're overreacting
on inflation, and these wild swings from one direction to the other, when the Fed should be in the business, as Vivek Ramaswamy has said, of just stabilizing the dollar rather than these wild swings based on them trying to guess how long the lags are.
That's what I said when I was nominated to be on the Fed. And, of course, all Washington went berserk because they you got to understand these people. They're like the Wizard of Oz behind the curtain. They love to, push this lever and that lever and have control. It's about controlling the economy. And they think they're so smart because they went to MIT and they went to Harvard and Yale. So they know what's good for us. Oh, push this, So these are the same people. I've told this story before, but I'll say it again. There were 11 Nobel Prize winning economists who, when Biden came in with his $6 trillion spending spree, wrote in the New York Times, "Don't worry, this won't cause inflation."
Right.
Inflation went to 9.1. So who do you believe? You believe me, because I'm the best economist out. No, but my
there
point is, I do think that inflation is coming down, thank God, but I am worried about this economy really crashing. And that's why I think this debt, people should be paying attention to this, because if we can get spending down, I think that's the most important thing. Speaking of Milton Friedman, whenever I asked him, because I knew him when he was alive in his later years, I'd always say, what's the best thing we can do to grow the economy? You know what he said, Dan?
What?
Cut government spending.
Yeah,
government spending is not a stimulus. It's a de-stimulus.
Right.
It's like
crowding out private activity. Right, of course.
Yeah.
Fundamentals.
Yep.
Steve Moore, economist, best around, he says.
Wait, I got to tell him what happened. Our high school played your high school last night.
Oh, yeah, right, New Trier. Yeah, New Trier versus Allman Brothers.
In what sport?
Boys volleyball. And I have to tell you, your team
is... We won! New Trier won!
Yeah, okay, relax. They did call a timeout in the second set when we made a comeback, but the players at New Trier were lovely, well-behaved gentlemen. The coach was great, and...
Well, that's not a fun story.
Well, no. What makes it fun is that we block them, but with one, I'm just going to call him Big T. He has 100 blocks, fifth in the state of Illinois, number one in Chicago Public's Gold League.
Oh, my
so
God.
Good for him. And my son just destroyed. He had the best game of his life yesterday.
Fantastic.
Six kills.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
By the way,
congratulations
one last
on
thing
losing.
On the way.
And by the way, how do you know what's happening with boys volleyball at New Trier, Steve Moore?
He knows now.
Because I follow this stuff every day. One last thing on the way out, just so you guys know. The
economics of Boys Volleyball.
The new census data came out on population of cities. Here is an amazing statistic. You can look this up. Did you know that 100 years ago, Chicago had a higher population than it does today?
Yeah, I did
know believe that.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? Yeah. I mean, you are ruining one of the greatest cities on the planet.
Well, manufacturing jobs are out. Now everything's out. Every big corporation.
And 100 years from now, Arlington, Virginia is going to have a higher population than Chicago does today. Steve Moore, economist and GovZilla author. Steve, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Okay, guys. Have a great week. Take care.
Thanks. You too. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
You've made the switch. And it feels so good. You switch to Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Are you going to give Target the Bud Light treatment? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36DA, turnkey.pro text line.
I don't know, between the Adidas suit for dudes, woman's swimwear, between that and then this new swimwear at Target, it's kind of, I don't know, I'm a little repulsed.
It's more than just swimwear for the kiddies.
What else?
There's a We Belong Everywhere messenger bag, a Too Queer for Here messenger bag, a Cure Transphobia sweatshirt. The designer that Target has partnered with for the last year is called Ab Prelin, who is a Satanist, trans Satanist, the best kind of Satanist. His Instagram page, as has been pointed out by a Wisconsin education advocates named Scarlett Johnson, who tweeted on the topic, brought all these images to us. Thank you, Scarlett. Satan Loves You is one of his designs. He markets a trans witches for abortion pin. Hang with Satan instead. Satan respects pronouns. These are all quotations. Yeah, you should see some of the images. I mean, all satanic. I'm not making comment. They're literally designs of Satan and promotion of Satan. Satan respects pronouns. Heteronormativity is a plague. Mm-hmm. Ab Prelin. Now the Satan inspired designs are not what's in Target. Just sort of just one step above, I suppose. Target's CEO, Brian Cornell, said in a podcast last week about these business decisions that have been made by Bud Light, by Disney, by him at Target. They're just good business decisions. It's the right thing for society, and it's a great thing for our brand. Well, not everywhere, apparently, because Fox News reported that some Southern Target stores are moving their LGBTQ pride merchandise away from the front of their locations after customer outrage. They're a little worried about the reaction they're getting to the tuck-friendly bathing suits, the onesies for boys and men. A California mom filmed herself at a Target store. So this is California. That's not the South. And this was her reaction to what she was seeing as she described it to those who watched her video.
Okay, this is the child section. This is literally the kids section. I'm next to a literal onesie that says whatever the hell that means. We have Glad You Came Out, and I'm So Happy That You're Queer in the kids section. Are you kidding me? I'm sorry, but pride and toddler don't belong in the same sentence. So I found an extra small swimsuit in the child section. It says light binding effect on it. And then the bottoms in the kids section, keep in mind, say tuck friendly construction. They're giving it to your kids. If that doesn't give you a reason to boycott Target, I don't know what does.
tuck-friendly swimsuits. Well, Alex Primetime Stein, our friend there.
Yeah, he tried one on.
Provocateur from Dallas. He went to a local Target store and tried one on, modeled it for the employees.
Beautiful.
Wonderful. They seemed to enjoy that. I did not enjoy seeing him in a onesie.
I did not, with the loafers too, but not a good look.
But I take the point.
We're at Target, checking out their tuck-friendly Pride collection. That's right, guys. Extra crotch coverage, tuck-friendly construction. Thank you, Target.
No, it is.
I don't think this is
a
tucking one.
It is, look. Tuck, oh. Tuck-friendly
construction, okay. Well, let's see how tuck-friendly it is.
Hey, well, you can...
Wow, it's so tuck-friendly. It's nice to the... Let's come on here. I love the tuck-friendly bathing suit.
Talking to the employees.
Yeah, now he's on the floor.
Right, yeah. This is nice. You guys see this? It's tuck-friendly.
Oh, we see it. Yeah, it is tuck-friendly. Interestingly, Brian Cornell, the CEO of Target, also recently complained about inventory shrinkage. Maybe you could use some tuck-friendly accounting. Target is projecting that it will have $500 million in lower profits this year. Ooh. Due mostly to theft.
Oh, yeah.
So his friends that run the big cities and the blue states that support his tuck-friendly bathing suits for boys, boy, the other policies he's not so keen on, apparently.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line. You could also text us at 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment. Who's going to have trouble going to Target? So we have Walmart, but we don't have a lot of Walmarts in the city. It's everything's Target.
I'm not going to have any trouble with that new tuck-friendly, that swimwear. Yeah. Here's the thing. Target, you know, let's not forget, Target was one of the first to go, non-gender bathrooms.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, so Target's been in the crosshairs for a while, or it should have been. Mac in Griffith, Indiana, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, well, as always, being the good Hoosier I am, I tell all you folks in Illinois, don't move here. We don't want you. Don't drag your friends here, I mean, no matter how good-looking they are.
Not a welcoming city. Yeah, right.
Do not come. We're gonna have armed militia on the border there. But I got to tell you, I went to the Target near where Amy does hot yoga, and they've got a little display. And I happened to be wearing a pair of shorts when I was driving by, and I thought, well, I'm going to go in there and just see what the merchandise looks like. I got a couple clerks up there, and I said, hey, what part am I supposed to tuck? And when I started grabbing myself a lot, and then the male clerk there, I go, hey, are we tucking you, or how do these tuck things work? They got silent and uncomfortable, and I couldn't believe it. Then when they brought a store manager over there, I asked him, and I started reaching for him, and he said, oh, whoa, we can't, no. And it got pretty awkward pretty quick, and then they said, do you really want this, or do we need to call security? I go, I'm just talking the tuck stuff here, man. Come on. This is – we have to drive the price of Target stock to zero. Please don't shop there anymore, folks, because we got to draw the line here somewhere.
Thanks, Mac. Deborah, Arlington Heights.
Morning. A couple of years ago when I walked into Target, they had a display right in the front of the store, and I had a problem then with it, and I'm absolutely done shopping there now. You know, they're brain mapping kids. There's something called brain mapping, and all it takes maybe in some cases is a child to see something one time where it makes a lasting impression, and then when they see stuff over and over again, you know, they're thinking that this is normal and normalizing this. And I'm sorry, I'm going to have to vehemently disagree that this is normal. I don't know why we're not getting people psychiatric help for issues. I don't understand it.
Deborah, what was the display that upset you so much?
Well, it was, you know, all of the Pride Month and children's and adult clothing mannequins dressed that way, right when you walked in the store. I'm not telling any adult what to do, but this is clearly targeting children at this point, and that disturbs me immensely.
Well, yeah, thanks for the call, Deborah. I mean, that will happen when you get in bed figuratively with a Satanist designer, I suppose.
Why would they choose
a trans? Excuse me, a trans Satanist designer.
I mean, like is anybody vetting anybody anymore? Or is that to be celebrated now that you're a transgender Satanist?
Bob Southside.
Morning, Dan. How are you? Amy, Dan, been longtime listener all the way back to your Saturday afternoon days.
Wow. Oh boy, hate Saturday. Thank you.
I have to say I still shop at Target. I still drink Bud Light. I think a lot of this is a lot of to do about nothing. I really do. I think the more important issue, Dan, that Target should be addressing is the one you just talked about, which was frankly the hundreds of millions of dollars of retail theft that they're losing. And I think all this other stuff is just it's just a big distraction. Too many people on the right and they are upset. Too much emphasis is given on the left. That's my thought on it.
All right. Thanks for the call, Bob. But good news for you. Bud Light is practically giving away their product. They got all kinds of Memorial Day special rebates because, you know, they're hemorrhaging customers.
So if you do the rebate, basically you're basically paying $3 for a case of beer. That's what I did the math for you.
Sort of their please clap right, please. Rebate giveaway for Memorial Day.
Please drink us before the beer expires.
Joe, Glen Ellen.
Hey, I'm surprised I didn't think of this question sooner, but Amy, do you know, is any of this stuff at Target, do they have anything for adults or is it strictly all children? Because that would be a key thing
Alex Stein, he fit into it. He's an adult.
Yeah, there's some in the onesie. Adult section and the kids section.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Here's a text message.
Thanks for the call.
And in related news, yet another classic American company shows its woke colors as Oscar Mayer cuts off its wiener. Mobile. Because they're changing it. It's not the wiener. It's the Frank Mobile.
Mm.
For Franks.
Right. Mm-hmm. My baloney has a first name.
Yeah.
Do you know what it is?
My baloney.
You don't know the song?
It has a first name.
It's O-S-C-A-R.
My baloney has a second name. It's
M-A-Y-E-R.
I love to eat it every day. And if you ask me what I'll say, because Oscar Mayer has a way of B-L-O-O-G-N.
You can't spell bologna. You had it, and you can't spell bologna.
I couldn't stick the landing. Darn it.
B-O-L-O-G-N-A.
B-L-O-G-N-A.
Just think about it rhyming. That's
okay.
And then you'll spell it right.
Mm-hmm.
Christine and Beverly.
Hey, good morning, Dan and Amy. Love your guys' show. I have two Targets I go to, one near home, one downtown that I try to avoid since we got people walking in there stabbing security guards and whatnot.
Yeah,
absolutely
sure.
Horrified that this crap is going on. This is nuts. Of all the things that kids need now, think of all the time the kids lost in school with this COVID crap, and this is what Target's promoting. This is absolutely insane. You want a child, a male child, to wear a female swimsuit and tuck his penis. What in God's name is going on? That is absolutely – how do you say that to a child? And how do you applaud a child for doing that? Because that's what they're doing. They're telling these kids that you're brave for tucking your penis in this girl's butt. That's brave? Are you kidding me?
Thanks for the call, Christine. Vin, St. Charles.
Morning, guys. We're hoping if I cut up my Target card and left it on
the... Oh, cut off? Did you say cut off your Target card or cut off?
Ouch.
Oh, God, man. Yeah, that's a... no, cut off the Target card and put on the service desk.
Thanks for the call, Vince. Rick, Downers Grove.
Hey, good morning. Hey, good morning. I got to ask, do you think that this... trans stuff is going to burn itself out, because everybody I associate with, they don't care if a guy wants to dress up like a woman and all that. They just want to be forced to accept it and think it's wonderful. And but do you think it's ever going to it's on its way out and it's going to burn itself out, because they're just like going way over the top with all this stuff?
What do you think?
I like to think that it is burning itself out, just from the groups I associate with and what they feel about it.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Rick. I don't think so. I mean, I'd love to be optimistic like Peachy Keenan, we spoke with yesterday, or Ryan Anderson, that they're going so far, you know, Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence at a Dodgers game, they're going so far that there's going to be a backlash. But I'm not really seeing it.
Well, there's a little progress this morning. We're learning that Norway is joining Sweden, Finland, United Kingdom, the states of Kentucky, Texas, and Florida in banning sterilization, castration, and mastectomies on minors.
I mean there's a fight afoot, and there are some lines being drawn, but I don't know if those lines hold.
I really love this tweet from End Wokeness. 10-year-old wants to gamble, can't. 10-year-old wants to smoke, 10-year-old wants a tattoo, 10-year-old wants to drink alcohol. No. 10-year-old wants gender castration and mutilation. He or she is stunning and brave and can do it.
Yes. Is it going to burn itself out? Well, Mr. 10%, the big guy, President Biden, he wants to make equity and civil rights a top priority in development of responsible AI. So the White House is asking, what are AI's pronouns, essentially? And you think this is on the way out? It's not going to go quietly. I'll tell you that. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
Connect with Dan and Amy using the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Dan and Amy, to reverse some of these noxious cultural trends, it is going to require Democrats of conscience, and there are some out there. Let me give you an example. Georgia State Representative Misha Maynor, who broke with her party in Georgia to support opportunity scholarships for kids in K-12. Listen to what she said, describing her break from her party, despite the heat that she got from her teachers' union wholly owned subsidiary, the Democrat Party.
I support school choice, parent rights, and opportunities for children to thrive, especially those that are marginalized and attend a failing school. The Democrats at the Capitol took a hard position and demanded every Democrat vote against children and for the teachers' union. I voted yes for parents and yes for children, not failing schools. Some of the schools I represent have a 3% reading proficiency, or children can't do simple math. So I have a few colleagues upset with me, to the point where they are giving away $1,000 checks to anyone that will run against me. I'm not apologizing because my colleagues don't like how I vote, when my community loves the fact that someone is finally sticking up for them and holding these systems accountable. Let's be real. Parents do not want their child trapped in a failing school. And they aren't frustrated with teachers. They're upset with the elected leaders that put the teachers' union and donors ahead of their constituents. I hear Black Lives Matter, but do they? I see every other minority being prioritized except Black children living in poverty that can't read. We'll send $1 million to the border for immigrant services, but Black communities, not even a shout out. I'm sorry. I don't agree with this. I'm not backing down, and I'm actually just getting started.
If only we had a couple of Democrats of conscience like Misha Maynor in Illinois, in Chicago. Frankly, we need more Republicans of conscience like Misha Maynor in the state of Georgia. But they're out there. They're out there. Thank you, Misha.
Connect with Dan and Amy using the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile. Now, from the Signature Bank Studios, this is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. I'm a bit of a history buff, and I love the World War. Well, I love the war stories that we don't know. I love when they get told, whether novel form or movie form. We talked the other week about the new Guy Ritchie movie, The Covenant, which is a fictional story, but it portrays a real thing: the relationship between U.S. troops in Afghanistan and the Afghan interpreters who work for our government, worked with our armed forces in advance of their mission in Afghanistan. Unfortunately, the failure of the United States to keep its promise to so many of those Afghan interpreters. We talked a good bit about that with Dakota Wood from the Heritage Foundation, for example. I read a book recently about a paratrooper in World War II named Gene Metcalf. The book is called Left for Dead at Nijmegen, I think is the pronunciation. It's Dutch. My Dutch is a little rusty. But anyway, he was 82nd Airborne. He's dropped into Holland as part of Operation Market Garden. And if you know the history of Operation Market Garden, the planners of that offensive vastly underestimated the German presence. And once they realized they had, Gene Metcalf and others are sort of left for dead. They were assumed killed in action. But he tells his story as he ultimately is a POW before Americans free the camp in which he was being held and so forth. But so I'm ruining the ending a little bit, but the story is worth telling. We've got another such story. It's a new book called Angels Against the Sun, a World War II saga of grunts, grit, and brotherhood by paratrooper turned author James Fenelon. James Fenelon he served in the U.S. Army for more than a decade. He's a graduate of the U.S. Army's Airborne, Jumpmaster, and Pathfinder schools as well. James Fenelon, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Good morning. Thank you for the opportunity.
Tell us the story of this World War II paratrooper unit known as the Angels that helped free the Philippines, a story that, again, like the story of Gene Metcalf, was not well known until someone memorialized it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you provided a great framework for us to talk about it. So the 11th Airborne, their nickname was the Angels, which was kind of a sarcastic reference to their unangelic behavior, if you will. You know, these guys were 19 years old. The average age of the men in the unit when they formed in 1943 was 19. And, you know, you can imagine young men looking for things to do when they're away from home and slipping the shackles of Army authority on the weekends and things. And so it was, you know, a routine sarcastic question that one of the unit commanders would ask, how many of our Angels are still in jail this morning? And that kind of stuck, and that's kind of how the unit got its nickname. But it was in late 1944 that they shipped out after initially spending some time on New Guinea and landed on the island of Leyte, where they began their World War II campaign against the Japanese.
And you provide some details of what it was like to wage war in that environment.
Yeah, and I think that's a great way to frame it, because I think, you know, before these guys engaged against the enemy, the Japanese in this case, they were at war with the environment. You know, this was a jungle island. It had been raining for well over 30 days when they landed. So, you know, the mud was in many cases ankle or calf deep. Digging a foxhole in those circumstances was trying, because the walls kept, you know, collapsing on you. You always had a layer of mud in the bottom. You had disease, malaria, typhus, dysentery, things like that that you had to be concerned about. You had insects, the heat, humidity. And so it really was a twofold campaign, you know, if you will, of one against the environment, the island itself, and then, of course, against the Japanese.
And we've had other books and series that have recounted how brutal the Pacific Theater was. What was the combat like in that environment for those paratroopers, the Angels?
Yeah, so it's these guys were kind of responsible for marching up into the central mountain range on Leyte Island. And if you imagine a long, kind of oblong shape, the central mountain range divided it lengthwise. And so the 11th Airborne was tasked with marching up from those mountains and setting up blocking positions up in those very small jungle trails. And when we say trails, these are like almost just animal footpaths kind of thing. It was impossible to get jeeps up there. And so what happened is, as these guys get up into the mountains, it really puts them in a position to where all of the American technology is negated. And so because they're so, you know, alone up in the mountains there, there's constant cloud cover up on the mountains, so they can't really call in air support. The maps are literally hand-drawn in many cases, and so they can't call in accurate artillery fire. And so it really put them in a position to where it was, you know, American light infantry going toe-to-toe with the Japanese infantry coming over the opposite direction. Like, so it really became a war of attrition where these two elements were just battling for supremacy of the high ground.
So you mentioned in your book that the war in the Pacific was so much more brutal than the war in Europe, and that plays a part in it. But what else is, you know, the reason why you believe that to be true?
Well, I think, you know, the Japanese, it has to be said, really, the Japanese army really set the terms and the conditions of how the Pacific War was going to be fought. You know, at this point in the war, in late October 1944, you know, American media had well covered what had happened to the prisoners of the Bataan Death March. So, you know, American soldiers on the ground were put in a position where they knew that they were going to be treated badly if they were captured. Of course, on the Japanese side, you had this effort by the Japanese leadership to kind of, you know, take this idea of honor and tradition and the samurai warrior ethic, and they kind of wrapped it around, you know, other elements of religion to really set up this no surrender, don't lose your honor type of mindset that in the Japanese soldier was kind of, you know, imbued with this sense of if they fought hard enough and they fought you know, with honor and from their perspective that they couldn't lose, right? That their cause was righteous. And so that really kind of set this tone for the fact that neither side was willing to back down. One, because their honor was at stake, and the other was, you know, from the Allied side, because they weren't going to put themselves in a position of being overrun or taken prisoner.
I mean, for those who don't know, I mean, the Japanese conquest of the Philippines was one of the worst military defeats in U.S. history. I mean, the casualties, there were something on the order of 20,000 American military personnel and about 100,000 Filipino soldiers who were killed or captured, right?
That's right. It was, you know, it was a major setback to the Allied cause in, you know, what started right after Pearl Harbor. The Japanese, of course, invaded a number of islands in the Pacific, Midway, the Philippines, and it was a protracted campaign as the footprint of the Philippine army and the American army on the Philippine islands, you know, shrunk and got smaller and smaller. And then, of course, you know, most people are probably familiar with MacArthur and holding out on Corregidor.
Yeah. Right. And then the cost that was paid to liberate the Philippines.
Absolutely. And that was, you know, that was one of those
keep the mouth quiet
of the Japanese strategy was this idea of, well, if we can have one decisive victory over the Americans, we can come to the table on equal terms to discuss an end to the war. The Japanese never really kind of looked at it as getting better surrender terms. They looked at it as, well, if we can just grind the Americans down, the Allies down, we can get some favorable terms to how to end this thing and maybe keep some of the terrain that we've already gathered. And the way that manifested itself was these last-ditch, all-out defensive efforts to just make the Allies pay for every foot of ground they took. And you could see that, you know, one of the best examples of that is, of course, on Iwo Jima. But that same level of tenacity occurred, particularly in the battle for Manila, the capital city of the Philippines, which really became a, you know, block-by-block, brick-by-brick battle for that that city, which ultimately sadly resulted in over 100,000 civilians being killed.
What was the fate of the Angels?
So the Angels, after the Leyte campaign, their next campaign was into Luzon, the main Philippine island where the capital city was located. They landed both amphibiously and then unique to their capability. They airdropped in a regiment of paratroopers as part of that push into the south city limits of Manila, pushing their way into that. After the battle for Luzon, the 11th Airborne were the first troops to air land in Japan. So they were flown from the island of Okinawa after the two atomic bombs had been dropped. and they occupied an airfield right outside of Tokyo and secured it for the arrival of MacArthur, who then several days later accepted the formal Japanese surrender on the USS Missouri.
I suppose the schooling you had in the Army and the schools you went through, Jump Master and so forth, you learn about these heroes from previous wars, World War II in this case, and that sort of informs the ethic of soldiers of today. Is that fair? Is that what the point of knowing this history is, one of the points?
I think you're right. I think the point of knowing this is just recognizing, you know, the capability. You know, we tend to look at the Greatest Generation with a well-deserved sense of awe, but I think what really should drive that sense of admiration is understanding that these were, you know, 19, 20-year-old kids who refused to let their circumstances define them, right? It was a case of you can't choose what happens to you, but you can choose how you respond to it. And I think that's one of the best lessons, in particular of the 11th Airborne history, is just how these guys came together. You know, it would be an exaggeration to say that they all wanted to be there, right? That's just
sure.
Not true.
Sure.
But they continue to band together and do the best they could in the circumstances. Sometimes that's cracking a well-timed joke, and sometimes that's running out into machine gun fire to rescue a downed buddy.
Yeah, I mean, right. In an age where we have so many phony heroes, it's good to recall these stories and know these stories about actual heroes who served this country with honor and distinction. He is James Fenelon. He's a paratrooper turned historian, served in the Army for more than a decade, graduate of the Army's Airborne, Jumpmaster, and Pathfinder schools. The book, pick it up, Angels Against the Sun, a World War II saga of grunts, grit, and brotherhood. James Fenelon, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Dan. Have a great day.
Thank you, and he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Hear about the big stories of the day, then talk about them right here on Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.